Tonight I want us to read in the Old Testament and in the prophecy of Micah. We will continue our studies in the prophecy of Hosea, but as we've seen in the past few studies, the Lord has a controversy with the people in the book of Hosea. And that same theme of controversy is now raised for us in Micah chapter 6. Hear ye now what the Lord saith. Arise, contend thou before the mountains, and let the hills hear thy voice. Hear ye, O mountains, the Lord's controversy, and ye strong foundations of the earth. For the Lord hath a controversy with his people, and he will plead with Israel. O my people, what have I done unto thee? And wherein have I wearied thee? Testify against me. For I brought thee up out of the land of Egypt, and redeemed thee out of the house of servants. And I set before thee Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. O my people, remember now what Balak king of Moab consulted, and what Balaam the son of Beor answered him from Shittim unto Gilgal, that ye may know the righteousness of the Lord. Wherewith shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before the high God? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves of a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, or with 10,000s of rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? He hath showed thee, O man, what is good. And what doth the Lord require of thee but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with thy God? The Lord's voice crieth unto the city, and the man of wisdom shall see thy name. Hear ye the rod, and who hath appointed it? Are there yet the treasures of wickedness in the house of the wicked, and the scant measure that is abominable? Shall I count them pure with the wicked balances, and with the bag of deceitful weights? For the rich men thereof are full of violence, and the inhabitants thereof have spoken lies, and their tongue is deceitful in their mouth. Therefore also will I make thee sick in smiting thee, in making thee desolate because of thy sins. Thou shalt eat, but not be satisfied, and thy casting down shall be in the midst of thee, and thou shalt take hold, but shall not deliver. And that which thou deliverest will I give up to the sword. Thou shalt sow, but thou shalt not reap. Thou shalt tread the olives, but thou shalt not anoint thee with oil, and sweet wine, but shalt not drink wine. For the statutes of Omri are kept, and all the works of the house of Ahab, and ye walk in their counsels, that I should make thee a desolation, and the inhabitants thereof an hissing. Therefore ye shall bear the reproach of my people. Amen, and may God add his blessing and give to us understanding in that reading of his own holy word. We sing again his praises, this time using words from Psalm 15. Psalm 15. Within the tabernacle, Lord, who shall abide with thee? And in thine high and holy hill, who shall a dweller be? The man that walketh uprightly and worketh righteousness, and as he thinketh in his heart, so doth he truth expense. Who doth not slander with his tongue, nor to his friend doth hurt, nor yet against his neighbour doth take up an ill report. In whose eyes vile men are despised, but those that God do fear he honoureth, and changeth not, though to his hurt he swear. His coin puts not to usury, nor take reward will he against the guiltless. who doth thus shall never move be. Psalm 15, the whole of the psalm, within thy tabernacle, Lord, who shall abide with thee? Will you come back with me then to what we were looking at and have been over the past weeks, the prophecy of Hosea. The prophecy of Hosea and chapter 4. We can read again from the beginning and verses 1 through 10. Hear the word of the Lord, ye children of Israel. For the Lord has a controversy with the inhabitants of the land, because there is no truth, nor mercy, nor knowledge of God in the land. By swearing and lying and killing and stealing and committing adultery, they break out and blood toucheth blood. Therefore shall the land mourn, and every one that dwelleth therein shall languish, with the beasts of the field and with the fowls of heaven, yes, the fishes of the sea also shall be taken away. Yet let no man strive nor reprove another, for thy people are as they that strive with a priest. Therefore shalt thou fall in the day, and the prophet also shall fall with thee in the night, and I will destroy thy mother. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge, because thou hast rejected knowledge. I will also reject thee, that thou shalt be no priest to me, seeing thou hast forgotten the law of thy God. I will also forget thy children. As they were increased, so they sinned against me. Therefore will I change their glory into shame. They eat up the sin of my people, and they set their heart on their iniquity. And there shall be like people, like priest. And I will punish them for their ways and reward them their doings. For they shall eat and not have enough. They shall commit whoredoms and shall not increase, because they have left off to take heed to the Lord. And tonight I want us to think, as the Lord leads us, to verses 7 through to 10 of that chapter we read, Hosea 4, 7 through 10. Today, if there's a problem in society, we blame the politicians. They're the ones in government, they're the ones that are responsible, and with the elections coming off just in these next few days, they're all very careful in the promises they make, because they will be judged by them in 4 or 5 years' time. They make proposals and manifesto and speeches, and we can always hold them to it. They make great and lavish, lush promises. There is the new society. There is the big society. But I don't think I've heard yet any word about the right society. Politicians and their place and perspective, they're so central and they're so influential in the way things happen in our land in these days. There is so little Christian input into government, into the legislation that comes on to the statute books of our land. Christianity is deemed to be just another lobby group, standing in the queue with all the other groups that want to have an ear of the politician. But it was different in the Old Testament. In the Old Testament, being a covenant people and a covenant nation of God, all of the structure of society was drawn from and based on biblical teaching. There they got the principles that shaped and molded not only the individual, but in the Old Testament they got the principles that shaped and molded the very society in which they had a part and where they had a life to live. And if that basis, influence, if that perspective and input of biblical teaching is lost in the New Old Testament, then society begins to crack, fray at the edges, and ultimately will fall apart. And that's what was happening with Hosea's day. But the days of Hosea are held up as a mirror to reflect our own time and our own society. We saw that last week in the problem with the priests, with the clergy that we were looking at. The way in which we simply went through it and explained it, and as we were doing so, we could almost immediately catch hold of the application of what we were taking to our own day. That same principle and approach applies to tonight's study. We see the loss of our Christian foundation. We see the loss of Christian standards operating in relationships. We see the loss of the knowledge of God and the consequent loss of power and motive. We see an eclipsing of the fear of God in our society. In Judges, I think it's 7 and 21, we're told, 17 and 21 rather, that each man did what was right in his own eyes. There is no longer a reference to what God requires or what God says. It becomes very individual and very personal. We're getting to that stage today as well. That's the kind of life that Hosea was living in. So we've got to ask ourselves the question, in Hosea's day, where did it all start? How did this situation arise? And what are the lessons for ourselves today? And really, it is quite remarkable how close the picture that Hosea gives us reflects the situation in which we're living ourselves today. We were reading there in Micah chapter 6, we've got it repeated at the beginning of Hosea chapter 4, that the Lord has a controversy with his people. We saw particularly in that difficult verse 4, let no man strive, let no man reprove another. Don't start talking and gossiping amongst yourselves, well, who's to blame for this or that or the other thing. The Lord breaks in at the second part of verse 4 and he says, it's not what's written in the authorized version, but this is the way the best translations perhaps of that. It's a difficult verse, but the better translation of it runs like this. I will show you with whom I have a controversy. With you I have a controversy, O priest. And we saw there the way in which that has light given to us from the book of Amos, chapter 7, because there we see the problem that Amos had with this prophet, this priest called Amaziah, and the way in which he was given a hard and a difficult time by the words that Amaziah spoke against him. And it was with that single high priest and with his priest's family that the Lord has a controversy expressed here by Hosea. So therefore, that's the summary of the charge. Like standing in court and the charge is read out. People have rejected and people have forgotten God. Verse 6. Thou hast rejected knowledge, thou hast forgotten the law of God. That's the charge. And now in these verses 7, 8, 9 and 10, we have something of the detail given to us to substantiate and fill out that charge that is levelled. And the best way of describing what's going to happen in these verses, take yourself up to Cow Hill. There you are sitting on the top of it, and you're looking out on the road to the Isles, the Malig Road. To begin with, you've got this broad perspective of the whole of the road, as far as you can see it, that is. And then you're given a pair of binoculars. And you begin to look with a lot more detail at the specific portions, parts of that road. And then at the end, you put the binoculars down and you've got back that great picture of the whole view. Now that's the pattern, the process that we're going to follow in these four verses tonight. The problem with the priesthood. That's where all this starts. So let's start then with verse 7. As they were increased, so they sinned against me. Therefore will I change their glory into shame. Explanation? What do we make of it? Well, that word, and they were increased. It could be fair to the children that's at the very end of verse 6. And so therefore it could refer to the children of the priest's family. But let's remember what's happening here. The Lord has an issue and a controversy with the high priest. That's who is the problem. They are the problem. The priesthood are the problem. And we're going to see something of that develop just in a moment. The priest and the priesthood are the problem. They were increased. That religious influence, that band, that grouping within Israel. They being the priest, a Messiah. If you go back again to the portion we read there from Amos chapter 7 and verse 10, you'll find there that a Messiah has an audience with the king. He's able to go in and represent falsely what Amos is doing, trying to rubbish the reputation of Amos. He's got that influence with the king, so he's a significant player in the politics of the day. He has a significant power structure and influence and handle on the king. He is an important person. And so therefore, you can see the way in which, with that man, pride could easily come in. And let me suggest and put it to you that pride has come into this man. All that he's got, all he's achieved, the position he holds. As they were increased, as he and his family and the priesthood were increased, so they got more and more proud of what they'd become. They had arrived. They were the ones that had the ear of the king. They were the ones who were in a position of influence, albeit perhaps behind the scenes. So they had blessing. They had abundant blessing by the Lord. Spiritual blessing is a very hard experience to live with. That might sound strange to hear it said, but spiritual blessing is a very hard experience to handle and deal with. Imagine the glass, and that glass represents the blessing of the Lord gives to you. If that glass is full right to the top, I can roll it around. I'm not spilling a drop because it's not full. But if that glass were to be full to the top, and I were to tilt it even ever so slightly, something would spill out. We need a very, very steady hand hold the glass when it is full. We need a very, very steady character to handle spiritual blessing when it comes. Because so easily the danger can be of falling into pride. Look at what I've done. Just for a moment, look at what I've achieved. See the way in which the Lord has blessed me. That's the danger. And that's what was happening to this high priest that Amos identifies and that Hosea might refer to. We've said that prior to this there was great blessing underneath Jeroboam II, and that's referred to in 2 Kings chapter 14, verses 23 to 29. He extended the borders of the land, he gave them security, he gave them well-being and products. Now, we're told there that he didn't depart from the sins of Jeroboam, who made Israel to sin, and we've got to be careful. Well, if he was still like that, why did the Lord bless him? Well, if you go and read that portion later on, perhaps 2 Kings 14, we read there of the problems that there were in Israel. And the Lord had compassion on that people, and the Lord blessed these people in his grace. He gave them blessing in his compassion, but it was by no means a commendation of the behavior of the king. It came in grace upon that nation, his blessing. But when the blessings were received, there was no appreciation of who gave them. Instead, there was that idolatry that was rising in their land. Oh, it was the gods of the Canaanites, or it was the blessings of Baal. It was this, that, or the other that gave them these blessings, but certainly it wasn't Jehovah God. If you go back to a reading that we had just recently in Deuteronomy chapter 8, there it describes this very situation for us. Describing the land of promise, when thou hast eaten and art full, I'm breaking in to read it, Deuteronomy chapter 8 and verse 10. When thou art eaten and art full, then thou shalt bless the Lord thy God for the good land which he hath given thee. And then in verse 11 it says, beware that thou forget not the Lord thy God in not keeping his commandments and his judgments and his statutes which I command thee this day. And so it runs on, verse after verse, highlighting this danger of pride taking root and growing without appreciation or acknowledgement of the hand of the Lord who has given it. That's the principle, the danger highlighted. If you go to Daniel chapter 4 and verse 29, you find a specific example in the life of Nebuchadnezzar. Here he went for a walk on the balcony of his palace and he looked out and he says, all of these things my hand has got. And the words weren't even out of his mouth. And the Lord intervened and brought him down because of that pride in his own achievements and his own accomplishments, denying and depriving the Lord of the glory that was duly and rightfully his. And at that dealings, and in that way, in dealing with Nebuchadnezzar, we find right at the very end of Deuteronomy chapter 8, the Lord saying that he's going to deal with his people. And there in the life of Nebuchadnezzar, you have it brought out for us. Dealing with pride, dealing with that glorying in its own activity. So therefore, from Jeroboam's day, we can see that there was a blessing on the whole of the nation, the blessing on the whole of the people. And the responsibility was on everyone to respond appropriately to what they had received. That we can understand. But that responsibility came especially on the spiritual leadership. They were supposed to be more spiritually and more sensitive than others. After all, the priests were going in and out and dealing with the Lord regularly, constantly through the day. They had constant, closer relationships with God and dealings with God in the temple, in the worship, in all of the procedures of the day's ministry. They of all the nations should have been more sensitive to the hand of the Lord in giving what he did. How then did they respond? They did not show that. Instead, they cultivated the pride that we've just indicated they had. Blessings received. The danger of pride coming in close on their heels. When you go back to the life of Paul, and when you see the way in which he speaks in Corinthians, the second letter, isn't it? And he speaks there about his ministry and the way in which a thorn in the flesh was given him. Perhaps we're not sure specifically much of the detail about it, but we can see this at least. There was always the danger of pride coming into Paul's life. Look at what I've done. And the Lord gave him that thorn to keep him in the place of usefulness. Sometimes looking back, yes, not only Paul, but many a minister can look back and see what the Lord has done likewise, just to keep us in the place where the Lord can use us. The danger of pride. And we've always got to have a balance. We've always got to have a balance in the way in which we speak. In the way in which we speak to those who are the servants of the Lord. Yes, we need to give encouragement. But in the giving of the encouragement, we've also got to be aware that in every Christian's heart, but perhaps more so in every Christian minister's heart, there is a whole pile of dry grass, and all it needs is one spark, and pride is amok and out of control. To encourage is necessary and appropriate and needful, but also to be aware of the danger of pride coming in. There we have it. They were increased. The nation was increased. They were blessed. They were prosperous. And as they increased, as they got that blessing, how did they respond? We're told they sinned against me. So what's the consequence? We're still in verse 7. Therefore will I change their glory into shame. The Lord was going to intervene, and the Lord was going to change their boasting into shame. What did that mean? Well, remember who they were. They were God's people. They had that status. They had these privileges, that commitment of God. The blessings of God were heaped upon them. That was their glory. But the same God who gave them all these things is the same God that was now going to take them into exile, turning that glory into their shame. And especially because all you have to do is go back to chapter 2 and verse 8. She did not know, the nation did not know, that I gave her the corn, the wine, the oil, multiplying her silver. Therefore will I return and take away my corn in the time thereof. That's what the Lord is going to do to these people. They boasted, we are God's people, we're a special nation. And the Lord was going to use that against them. Where's your status now? A special people. The same applies to the priesthood. They were the mouth of the Lord speaking to the nation. They were the pleading of the heart praying before the Lord. Their glory turned into shame. Both Christian and Christian minister alike, there is that danger that we can boast in a similar way. We are special. Indeed, we are special. But we've got to be careful how we react when the Lord gives us blessing. Christian work can prosper, and we see it and its dangers round about us today. Christian work can prosper. It grows, it expands. And how is it reacted? How is it received? That's the moment of danger. To walk humbly with God. In that moment when blessing is received, the experience of Nebuchadnezzar is only a step, only a breath, only a word away. Verse 7. The problem is with the clergy. The mirror isn't, is it not, very sharp in reflecting today? But verse 8. They eat up the sin of my people and they set their hearts on their iniquity. What is this that he's saying to us? Remember what we said about being up on the hill and you've got a pair of binoculars? Well, what's this about? We're beginning to look at a little bit more specific detail. What was the behavior of the priests that the Lord took such offense at? Well, if you go back into the Old Testament and to Leviticus chapter 6 and verse 26, for example, and it's only one of many references, there the priests were allowed and were given part of the sacrifice for their own food and sustenance. They were allowed to eat portions of the sacrifices. That was their privilege. But that privilege was being abused. They eat up the sin. And it's the same word that can be used either for sin or for the sin offering. And if you put in the sin offering, it begins to make sense. They eat up the sin offering of my people. That's what they want. They set their hearts on their iniquity. They set their heart's desire on their iniquity offering, their sin offering. That's what they want. That's what they're chasing after. That's their next meal. And these priests ate well. Self-interest was behind what they were doing. This is what I want. Give it to me. And if that's the kind of approach they had when the sacrifice was coming, you can imagine and see that there was little encouragement for them to address sin. It gets worse. What about encouraging sin? So that there's a repeating of the sacrifice. And there's more food for the priests. Exploitation through spiritual means. Even encouragement to do it. If there's no spiritual discernment with these priests, then it's only a formality for them what they're doing. And they would simply keep on encouraging the priest, the people to come to offer sacrifice. You have it in the sons of Levi. Go back to 1 Samuel chapter 2 and verse 12, and you find there the details set out exactly what is happening here. The servants of the high priest would come along with a three-pronged fork, and they would want, well, I want that piece of meat. And I don't want it boiled, I want it fresh so that I can roast it. I want it my way, my terms. The people eat up the sin offering of my people, and they set their heart's desire on their iniquity or their sin offering. That's the problem with the clergy, the priests in that day. How does that apply to ourselves? Well, we've got to be very careful how we do apply it. But let me just paint a picture like this. Somebody comes to church. but they've got no obvious interest in what's been said and little respect for what's going on. And perhaps it's more a convenience for them to come to church than to listen to what God is saying to them. And they come in and that's the way they behave and carry themselves. But nobody dares say a word to them. Don't say a word to that person. They may leave. And what's going to happen to our numbers? And what's going to happen to our finances? Nobody challenges anyone anymore. That's the application of this verse to ourselves today. And therefore we've got to constantly ask ourselves the question, what am I doing? Why am I doing it? Is it for the spiritual good of others? Is there anything in it for me? That's the test. That's the trial. That's what these people were doing. Verse 8. We move on. What about verse 9? And there shall be like people, like priest. And I will punish them for their ways and reward them their doings. What the Lord is saying here is there's a consistency between the people and the priest. There shall be like people, like priests. As the priests behave in a certain way, so the people are going to follow them. Remember the phrase I used last week, that quotation that Al Martin left that has stayed with me constantly. Water is never higher than its source. So therefore, if the source, the spiritual source, if the spiritual leadership is bumping along the bottom, if they're as low and as slow as that, you don't expect normally the people to be any higher, bigger, or better than that example given to them. The priesthood are responsible as an example and as educators of the people. But if they have been compromised in their teaching and in their living, what then can be said about the people? Like the people, like the priest. That's what it means. They're not going to get any higher, bigger, or better than the spiritual pattern that is shown them. One way of understanding that phrase. But there's another way in which it can be taken out also. Verse 3 of this chapter. God is speaking about judgment coming upon these nations. And he speaks there about a dearth that's going to come on the nation. There's going to be a loss of joy, of satisfaction. Life is going to become an empty shell because of the sin of the people against God. So therefore, what about the priest? Is he going to be protected against that wave of judgment coming? No. In fact, because of the position and privilege that he had, because of the, remember what it said, the glory that he had, standing there between God and the nation, because of that position that he had, his responsibility is a lot more intense, and consequently he will be judged for it more strictly. There is no protection, special place. There's no privilege for the priest. This pattern of judgment, both, or at least this pattern of judgment coming on the people, so also on the priest. If you want to chase it up, you can go back to Isaiah chapter 23. And the beginning of that, it sets out like servant, like master. And it follows that pattern for several examples in Isaiah chapter 23. The one is judged, so is the other. The people are judged, so are the priests. So that's what verse 9 is saying to us. And what he's saying is going to happen is, and they shall be like people, like priests. I will punish them for their ways and reward them their doings. There's going to be a twofold judgment. It says their ways and their doings. First of all, their ways. What does this mean again? Well, the way is the broad path of life. You're up on the top of Cow Hill and you're looking at the road to the Isles. That broad pattern, that broad road that takes you somewhere. The general direction you're heading in. First of all, the Lord is going to look at the whole spectrum, the whole spread of life, the big picture. What are the principles that mold? What are the habits that you cultivate? What's the pattern that you've developed through the years of living? What is the purpose that drives you every day? What are you relying on to keep you going? The ways of a person's life, the broad path, the broad pattern of life. The Lord is going to look at that life of these priests, and he's going to look at them and see, well, where are you going? What principles have been operating? Self-interest comes out, wanting all this food for themselves. And so it goes on. The way of their life. But not only the way of their life, he says, I will reward them for their doings. And it's perhaps more appropriate to take their deeds. Yes, he's looking at the way. And then he hands you the pair of binoculars and he's looking at specifically, well, let's look at this one day and let's take all of the moments of that one day and dismantle it into separate pieces. Let's look at one event. In fact, let's look at every building block that goes up to make this path, this road that you're on. Take the building blocks of your life and examine each one of them in the light of God's word. So that's what's now being done to the priest. That thought that you had when you went up, thinking of, well, I'm going to get a piece of good lamb out of this for myself. That particular thought that you had, that also was underneath the scrutiny of God. And they're going to be measured not by their own standards, but they're going to be measured by the standards that God has set. That's what's going to happen. There's going to be this consistency, this judgment on the people, judgments on the priests. Looking at the way of their life, the tenor, the tone of their life, looking at the individual aspects and details of their life. And then lastly, bear with me just a few minutes when we finish verse 10. What's going to come? For they shall eat and not have enough. They shall commit whoredoms and shall not increase because they have left off to take heed to the Lord. What's he saying? What's the outcome of this judgment that the Lord is going to bring? It's twofold again. Briefly, it's this. There's always, maybe this is a principle we've got to take from this, apply other areas of life, there is always an appropriateness in judgment of God to the sin that's identified. See what it says here. They shall eat and have not enough. What have they been doing? They've been going and they've been looking for the best cut of meat. They've been going and getting the best of the sacrifices from the spiritual offerings of the people. And what is God saying? You're always going to be empty inside. You're never going to be satisfied. That's what you've been doing all these days, but you're never going to reach there. And it's going to be more than just simply eating. It might start there, the way you've dealt with the sacrifices. You're never going to be full. But there's also going to be the consequence, experience of this in other departments of life. You're looking for peace in society. You're not going to get it. You're going through a formal pattern of worship and you're never going to be at peace with God. You're always going to be and have that emptiness inside. You're never going to be at rest. That's the first way in which the Lord judges them and brings judgment upon them. He says also, whoredoms, you shall commit whoredoms and you shall not increase. These people were indulging in loose and extensive sexual behavior. But despite it all, there's going to be no increase in their numbers. You're not going to break out. You're not going to have a growth in the population, in the cities, in the economy, in the army. Try whatever you will, it's not going to happen. There's going to be no progress, no growth, there's going to be no development, because God is in a controversy with you. Go back to the experience of Jericho and the sins of Achan, and the way in which he took what was prohibited to take. And the people moved on and they tried to capture the city of Ai. And they were set back and rebuffed, and they had to retrace their steps right back to the sin that that man committed and the way in which he was a blot and a blight upon them. And it was only when it was addressed and removed and dealt with that they could move forward. God has a controversy with these people, and it's only when that controversy is being dealt with that these people will move forward. What is the controversy? What's the problem? You're up on the top of Cow Hill, we're almost at a close. The binoculars taken out of your hand, you're back again to the broad view. What do they say at the very end of verse 10? They have left off to take heed to the Lord. They no longer have any regard, respect or involvement. They no longer have any reference to God. It's no longer, well, what does the Lord say about this? What does the Lord say about that? What's his word give me guidance on how I should behave, how I should vote? What? None of that happens anymore. They left off taking heed from their God. Life goes on without Jehovah. That's what we've got thus far. The start of the problem with the priesthood. Let me leave it at that. Let me just simply give three words to close with. Much of what we've been saying tonight has been negative criticism. Let's turn these very qualities round positively. And that's why I read from Micah chapter 6. Because there God has a controversy with his people. And what is it the Lord says he requires of you? He says, do justly. Love mercy. Walk humbly with your God. Let that be the habit of your life. Because when that's that humility, then you're able to carry the blessings that God gives. Do rightly, open, upright, transparent in all that you're doing. Nothing hidden. Love mercy. Always thinking of the best for others. That's the kind of person the Lord looks for. And that's the kind of ministry that the Lord wanted amongst his people, but Amaziah was not fulfilling. And that's the kind of ministry that we're looking for ourselves today. That these qualities be uppermost, that these qualities might be seen in the people who are spiritual leaders in our land. Pray for that kind of leader for our people today. Let's close with prayer. O Lord, our gracious God, as we look into thy word, give to us not only an understanding of what these words mean and say, but help us, Lord, to export them and to translate them and to transfer them out into ordinary everyday life with ourselves. Help us, Lord, to see their application where we are and who we are. And we ask, Lord, that as there are faults and failings identified by them in us, grant us the grace to put things right but also, Lord, to seek in others these noble qualities which thou hast set and identified for us and others. Lord, think of us then, and bless us together, and use us for thy glory and thy praise. In Jesus' name we ask it. Amen. We close by singing from Psalm 138. Psalm 138 and verse 3. Thou didst me answer in the day when I to thee did cry, and thou my fainting soul with strength didst strengthen inwardly. All kings upon the earth that are shall give thee praise, O Lord, when as they from thy mouth shall hear thy true and faithful word. Yea, in the righteous ways of God with gladness they shall sing. For great's the glory of the Lord who doth for ever reign. And then particularly these words. Though God be high, yet he respects all those that lowly be. Whereas the proud and lofty ones, afar off, knoweth he. Psalm 138 at 3 through 6. Thou didst me answer in the day.